Our second lesson comes after Easter. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, "I am going fishing." They said to him, "We will go with you." They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, you have no fish, have you?" They answered, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net to the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the sea. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, only about 100 yards off. When they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore, full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" because they knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he had said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and will take you where you do not wish to go." He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, "Follow me." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So often we end up talking about how things come in multiples, right? They come in threes, we'll say, when we're reading through the obituary section of the paper. We'll look for threes. And since there's just a couple baseball fans, you know, there's three strikes and three outs and all those sorts of things. And it's Trinity Sunday. And there's lots of threes in this passage, these two passages as well. And sometimes we forget that they come in multiples. Our faith has often built up so many things into just once, one time. You get one chance at this, and then it's over. So I grew up down south in the Bible Belt, and you only needed one conversion experience. It needed to be really good because you were going to get asked to tell it a lot. So, I mean, it needed to be a story you could tell and tell and tell and tell. But often that was it. There was nothing after that. We tell stories about each other, and one slip, one fall is enough to knock us off our pedestal, to knock us out of salvation, to knock us out of grace, to knock us, this is the problem we all have in the room, to knock us off our primetime TV slot. And I think these passages help speak differently to our faith. So the first one we know pretty well. We just read it during Lent. We know that Simon Peter is going to deny Jesus three times. All of the gospel writers talk about Simon Peter denying Jesus three times before the cock crows. Found it really interesting prepping for this sermon that in John's gospel, every time Simon Peter gets asked a question, it's phrased in the negative. And when we phrase a question in the negative, we've already set up the expected answer. So I'll do the one and I'll bring Mr. Bill into this one. Mr. Bill, you don't want that last bit of ice cream, do you? We know that the expected answer to that is no. Because we've phrased it that way. We've set it up that way. So when the woman at the gate says to Simon Peter, "You aren't one of his disciples, are you?" She wants the answer to be no. She set up the answer to be no. And no is indeed the answer Peter gives. Can you imagine how this story would be different? Peter goes, "Actually, yes, I'm with him. I'm with the guy you just hauled in here bodily with the police that you're going to crucify. I'm with him." Then we'd completely lose this story, wouldn't we? And after Jesus is convicted, sort of in the backroom dealings in the high priest's home, Peter is standing in a courtyard at a charcoal fire. This is the only place John uses the phrase charcoal fire, this story and the second story we read today. And Simon Peter is standing with the police and the guards at the fire. Now think about that for a moment. And somebody in the crowd goes, "Hey, you're not one of his disciples, are you?" Again, the negative question. Now think about this. You know, if we were doing this in the cartoons, this would be the scene of the one mouse at the meeting of the cats. "Hey, you aren't a mouse, are you?" Nope. No mice here. Nobody here but us cats. How else can he answer this question? Again, it would completely change the story, would change the narrative so fundamentally if Peter had owned up to being a disciple here. And then the last bit that John adds is that one more time he gets asked by a relative of the man whose ear he cut off, "I saw you in the room. Didn't I see you in the room where he was arrested?" Nope, wasn't there. Wasn't me. Didn't happen. I think the guy has some proof in an ear that it did happen. Simon Peter is standing in the middle of the courtyard of the high priest and the high priest's father-in-law, while they are taking Jesus inside to decide what to do with him. And the question is really, how do we kill him? Not, are we going to kill him? And when he is in that courtyard, he is literally in the enemy camp. And he is standing surrounded by the guards and the police and the people who want to see Jesus punished. And that, I believe, changes how he is able to answer. I'm not saying that to forgive him. I'm saying that I've done it, and I'm pretty sure most of you have done it at some point, that when you are standing with a certain group of people, you answer in a certain way because you want to survive. That's how I remember middle school. We all remember that tagline in John here that, "And then the cock crowed." The other gospels have the cock crowing and Jesus looking at Peter and Peter seeing Jesus and Peter remembering and realizing what Jesus had told him. Here, John is leaving us to fill in those blanks. So we know what's going to happen the rest of the story. And then we're going to get on the other side of Easter. And the disciples at this point, they really don't know what they're doing, which is probably good news for the church today, because some days we really don't know what we're doing either. And so they're kind of gathered together and somebody says, "Let's go fishing." And everybody says, "I'll do that with you." which is exactly sometimes how church mission works. Somebody comes up with an idea and everybody says, I'll go with you. And they go out in a boat, which is not surprising. Most of them were fishermen prior to being called and selected. And they fish for an entire night and they don't get anything. So clearly they're out of practice. The next morning, as the sun starts to come up, they see a man on the beach. They don't know who he is. That should sound familiar as an Easter story. And he calls to them, children, you don't have any fish, do you? No, we don't have any fish. Try the other side of the boat. And I mean, if these are fishermen like I know fishermen, there are some unkind words being said about the guy on the shore who is making comments that if they just throw the net on the other side of the boat, it would be fine. But it is fine, and the net is overflowing. And at that point, that disciple whom Jesus loved figures out who it is on the shore. And he says, it's Jesus, it's the Lord. And Simon Peter is fully Simon Peter in this moment. Having stripped down to his swimsuit, he pulls his coat, puts his towel around his neck, and jumps in. They're about 100 yards out. Everybody else brings the boat in. Jesus has a fire going, a charcoal fire. He has fish and bread already cooking. And he starts talking to them, and they have a meal. He feeds them fish. He feeds them bread. You should hear echoes of other stories. This is the Last Supper revisited. This is the feeding of the 5,000 revisited. This is the truth in the statement, I am the bread of life, revisited. This is as only Jesus can do. We talked about this in Sunday school. Charcoal is not easy to get going. Like, you need to plan, you need to prep. But I guess if you're Jesus, you just show up and the charcoal fire goes. Then you have fish. He invites them to bring more fish up. And then he sets, it sounds like from reading further in the gospel, that he pulls Simon Peter off and says, Simon Peter, let's go for a walk. And he's going to ask Simon Peter a question. And I'm sure by now you can guess how many times he's going to ask it. Simon Peter, do you love me more than these? So what's the question? Do you love me more than you love the other disciples? Do you love me more than the other disciples love me? We came up with, do you love me more than fish and bread in Sunday school? And we realized that Simon Peter doesn't really answer this question. He says, Lord, you know that I love you. Well, you know, go back to dating. How happy would you be if you told your significant other, I love you, and they said, you know that I love you. That's not really the answer you're looking for, is it? Jesus tells him to tend the sheep. Then Jesus asks again, Simon Peter, do you love me? Lord, you know that I love you. Feed my sheep. Simon Peter, do you love me? And John even includes that Simon Peter's getting a little frustrated with the Lord for asking him a third time. He feels hurt, is how the NRSV translates it. Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Feed my sheep. These are all questions asked in the affirmative. Do you do this? There's no negative here. And this time, Simon Peter can answer in the affirmative. And I wonder how much of it is the Easter experience, is the resurrection experience, that being with Christ makes it easier to say you're with Christ. I mean, I think we have that affinity on Sunday mornings that in worship, it's easier to say we're with Jesus than sometimes it is out there. I wonder how much of it is that the people he's standing with around that fire are also believers, have also been through what he's been through, has seen what he's seen with Jesus. And that makes it easier to say, notice he still doesn't get to a full-on acclamation of, I love you, Jesus. Lord, you know that I love you. I think one of our challenges is for us to realize that we constantly are being asked this question. It isn't just Simon Peter who gets asked this question over and over and over again. It's us. We get asked this question over and over and over again. We get asked it when we're about to lose our temper with someone. Do you love me? We get asked it when we're thinking about how will we spend the church's mission dollars. Do you love me? We get asked it in our homes, in our workplaces, in our schools, on our streets, each and every day. And we have to choose over and over and over again to say to the world that we love Jesus. And often the world has set the deck up where it's easier to give the negative. Oh, I'm not with Jesus. Nope. Jesus who? Who are you talking about? I think that's the power of these passages, is that this is not an all or nothing faith in terms of we get it right once and we're fine, and we get it wrong once and we're done. Our faith is an active, living faith that both has to be practiced, because frankly, we need to improve at it, and because we need to tell ourselves over and over again that this is what we believe and this is who we love. One of the interesting sidebars that came up in Sunday school is that maybe Simon Peter doesn't understand, isn't yet able to say how much he loves Jesus, and that's why he hedges his bets in these answers. There is something to saying it over and over again and having us realize that, yes, we actually do mean it. We've said it over and over and over again. My kids know that I'm a huge fan of the movie The Princess Bride. Yes, that's one of those cult classics that lives at my house. And if you know the story, you know there's a farmhand Wesley and there's a Princess Buttercup. And it starts off that he would say over and over to her, as you wish. And she finally realizes that as he says, as you wish, he is really saying, I love you. Most of us who have been in long relationships, friends, romances, have learned how somebody else tells us they care. My dad did it for 30 years. He got up every morning. He tripped down the stairs. He made sure that the coffee pot had turned on at the program time. He filled up a cup of coffee. He carried it back upstairs. He put it on mom's bedside table. Every day. Dad doesn't drink coffee. It wasn't that he was giving her the first cup and he was getting a cup for himself. Every day he made coffee and brought it. And in 100,000 little ways, that was him answering this question, do you love me? I think for us, it's important for us as people of faith who live day in and day out to be able to answer for ourselves out loud, how we love Jesus and how we show that to the world. And it's not always by putting a fish on the back of the car or a bumper sticker that says, honk if you love Jesus. It can be, you know, signing up for every time there's a chance to serve at the soup kitchen. It can be a kind word. Can be so many things, but ultimately it has to be you. It has to be us. It has to be who we really are. And after we've practiced it for a while, it may become true. So this week, I'd ask you to think about what it is that has happened to you over and over and over again in your life of faith, and how that sends you out to be a person of faith, and how that enables you to answer Jesus's question, do you love me? To God alone be the glory this day and forevermore. Amen.